the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast, and I'm blessed today to be sitting around a whole room full of critter killers. Y'all know who they are, but we got a new one in the mix today. Jeff, you gonna do that for us?
Yeah, we got, for those that don't know, started on July 1st, Dr. Whitney Crow. She's going to be located in Stoneville, 100% extension entomologist. You want to say something, Whitney?
Hello, thank you for the introduction, and I'm just happy to be here. So just remember me if you have any questions or concerns.
What's your cell phone number, Whitney?
901-592-8787.
All right, guys, so you heard it right there. If you get tired of calling the old hats and get tired of listening to what Angus has to say, you just call Whitney and she'll fix your problems for you. But with that said, today we're going to sit and talk about multiple things. And I think the first thing Angus wanted to talk about was what?
Spider mites.
Spider mites. You know, they turn your cotton red and they look ugly.
They definitely look ugly. And one of the things that we've been dealing with about the last probably 10 days or so, at least the things that's been dominating my calls, has been spider mites. So I definitely wanted, you know, us to get an opportunity to get together like we do and talk about spider mites, especially with all the rain we're having from this hurricane or tropical system that's moved up. It's generated a lot of questions.
So what does that rain generally do to spider mites? I know I've flared some before of my own doing. What does rain do?
With rain like we got, you can have those populations suppressed or even eliminated, but it's not guaranteed.
Yeah, I remember in 2005, Hurricane Dennis came through. We got 6 inches of rain. This was up in the northeast part of the state. We got 6 inches of rain, and it pretty much ruined my test. Just like Don said, it beat the numbers back pretty good. 10 or 12 days later, I put out the best spider mite test I've ever had because, like you said, it doesn't always eliminate them, beats the numbers back, but then they'll come back when we get back in hot, dry period.
The thing that we haven't experienced, at least in most areas with this tropical system, is we really hadn't had that hard driving rain, and that's what really kind of beats them back. It's been more of a slow, steady rain. And that's not as likely to beat them back as a hard, heavy, long-lasting rain.
Like we had a couple weeks ago, that 5-inch turd floater.
Yeah, yeah. That kind of stuff will knock them back quick.
So,
and you never know. This might kick that fungal disease off, too. So there's a lot of unknowns.
Well, take me back before the storm. What was our pressures like prior to this storm coming in?
Well, one of the things that we've been dealing with this year is you don't get calls a lot every day about spider mites anymore just because people are used to them and they know what to do. And we're spraying a lot of abamectin because of the price. So we don't necessarily get a call, hey, what do I do? But people I talk to on a daily basis are telling me they've treated once or twice for spider mites. A lot of this, I mean, it's all over, but most of it's coming from the North Delta. For some reason, that area seems to always be a really big hot spot, especially around that Clarksdale area.
Yeah, and they missed a lot of that rain, or at least didn't get as much of that 5-inch rain that we got a couple weeks ago. So they basically started off with a little higher populations once it got dry and able to build a lot faster up in that area.
Well, that's what I was kind of confused on when y'all wanted to sit in here and talk about this, because every time I've had a spider mite problem, it's been hot and dry. It's not been from the weather. So you're saying the weather is helping us and we might can, well, I guess you really didn't say that. You said it hadn't been bad enough rain to help us.
Well, we don't really know yet.
Yeah, I think there's no question that it's going to have an impact. I mean, it's going to keep the numbers from, I mean, now we're back into the 70s for high, you know, hot weather. They reproduce extremely quickly. Again, they do love hot, dry weather. And the numbers, even if they're knocked back, I mean, these things reproduce. They go from egg to adult in 5 days when the temperatures are hot. So these populations may get beat back some, but as soon as this weather moves out and we put 3 or 4 hot days together, I mean, it's going to start slowly coming right back and maybe quickly coming right back.
Okay, so is there a growth stage in cotton that I'm not worried about spider mites?
Well, spider mites can affect cotton from the time it comes out of the ground to the time you basically while leaves are on the plant. But there is a growth stage that we quit worrying about them from a management standpoint so much. And I'll let Gore talk about that some. He headed up a lot of this work that we did several years ago.
And we're not there yet, right?
No, yeah. I mean, we had a big Mid-South project that we did in collaboration with University of Arkansas, Tennessee, Louisiana, as well as here in Mississippi. And basically what we did is we went and put spider mites out in cotton fields at different times throughout the year. Basically pre-bloom, I think we had one or two timings before we hit bloom. And then once we got to bloom, it was first bloom and then every 200 heat units after that. So what's that, about a week's time?
Yeah.
Plus 5-6 days to accumulate 200 heat units.
Yeah, depending on how hot it is.
Yeah. And so we put them out all the way through the rest of the season at different times. And basically what it showed is that the biggest yield losses we get from spider mites is going to be pre-bloom. And then it was basically a stair step. The later we got into the blooming period, the impact of mites on yield were less and less every 200 heat units. And then I think essentially what we came up with is that we could terminate spider mite sprays when we terminate everything else, basically at that note above white flower 5 plus 300 heat units.
Based on what I've seen, what everybody else sees, we're not nowhere near that point right now.
No,
I think we're still at the point where we can expect significant yield losses from spider mites.
So yeah. In general, when a rain event does come in and suppress the numbers, how long do you got before they build back up if that disease that Don was talking about? Because when you mentioned that a while ago, you were talking about basically the environment driving them down because they didn't like it. But Don's talking about a disease coming in. Talk about that disease and how that factors in all this.
Well, the disease is very similar. In fact, it's the same genus as the aphid fungus disease, Nizagaites. It's a different species of the disease. You know, that when it comes in, it'll knock spider mites out, but typically it happens extremely late in the year. Rarely do we see this disease in Mississippi during the growth stages that we are now. It tends to show up really late if it shows up. It's not predictable.
It's not as reliable as the one that gets in aphids. Nowhere near that reliable.
So that doesn't even need to be on the radar right now.
I mean, it could happen, but I wouldn't bank on it for anything.
Yeah, so we're left with, treatment options. You know, are we at a point we need to treat? And if we are, what do we need to use and why?
Gotcha. So I heard you say abamectin a while ago because it's cheap. What else is on the market?
Well, there's several things on the market, but I think we need to mention a little more about abamectin first. I mean, abamectin would be my go-to coming out of the gate, and it would be that because of the price, and it's been very effective. But to give you an idea of its performance today, when it first used to be called Zephyr years ago, we got a 24C for the use in Mississippi. The rates that we used to use was 4 ounces. Even on big cotton, we used 4 ounces with great success. Now we're somewhere between 12 and 16 ounces, and we get good control unless resistance pops in. We documented resistance they did at LSU, and we sent mites in about 4 or 5 years ago. We have resistance in Mississippi too, but they tend to lose it over the wintertime. So we come out of the gate each year using this product because of the cost, but there's a point in the year we start generally seeing the efficacy decline. And I've had a couple calls out of that Clarksdale area where they use really good rates, and they're at the right time, and did not have satisfactory control.
So just ballpark, how many times do you feel like you can use it before you need to swap chemistries?
Well, this is going to sound like kind of a cheesy answer, but I think we sit there and we use the product because of the price, because the alternatives are much different until we start hearing about failures. Now, unfortunately, that means somebody's a guinea pig out there, but as soon as we start hearing about it, that's when we start putting the word out, hey, in this area, we're seeing some failures. Some people will continue to use that product because of price until they experience it themselves. But as soon as I start hearing about it, I put the word out, you might want to start thinking of these other products.
And the difference in price between abamectin and some of the others isn't a little bit of difference. It's a big difference.
So you can afford to have a failure?
Well, you can never afford to have a failure because, I mean, we always say that the most expensive insecticide treatment is one that doesn't work.
Or the one you don't spray.
Yeah.
Well, the price difference is enough that in most cases it's at least, in some people's mind, it's worth the risk.
There you go, yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Of it not working.
So the products, when you start thinking about, okay, when we lose the abamectin, if we lose it, we have to start to use other products, what might they be? You know, what are we going to go to? And the two that immediately come to mind that we talk about a lot, one is called Portal. That's a product by Nocino. And then we have another one called Zeal. That's a Valent product. And both of them products work very well. There's even another one out there that Bayer makes that they don't move a lot of it into the state. I think they really keep it for a lot of the vegetable markets. It's called Oberon, and it works extremely well too. So we do have other products with different modes of action that work extremely well. But again, you run into sometimes 2 and 3x price differences for products that only control spider mites.
And or availability at times.
And or availability, exactly.
I heard you say a couple things in that. Are you ready to leave spider mites and go somewhere else?
Well, I mean, I guess the only thing I want to come back around to, then we can go back to something else. I'd like to really talk about rain fastness and some insecticides, just hit on a few things. Is, you know, we talked about a couple of the failures that we've seen this year. For one, I want you to realize this does not mean that you will have a failure if you use abamectin. But what it does mean is we've had a couple, and the risk is starting to get, you know, we're hitting that point like Don was talking about. We're starting to get to a point that is it worth the risk, particularly if you're in that area where they've already had failures. And what the textbook would say was you need to switch modes of action, and I would switch modes of action, particularly if you're in those areas.
Yeah, and I think the area concept is something else to think about, is how much has been sprayed, not just on your farm, but on the farms around you as well. And that can be very important.
How big an area you want to talk about? Are you talking about a couple thousand acres, or are you talking about countywide?
Well, I would say close to countywide. If it's, you know, and generally that's how spider mites work. When the conditions are right in an area, and we start spraying plant bugs and flaring those mites, it generally happens in a pretty big area.
Don, you got anything to add to that?
No, they pretty much summed it up.
All three in agreement on how to control spider mites and when to switch. How about that?
We're always on the same page, though. We talk every day.
Well, you know, the main thing is if you have a failure, don't go back with the same thing.
That's right.
Yeah, what's the definition of that?
I'm not going to go there.
All right. Well, look, I want to interject something before we start talking about rain fastness, because I've seen it all over the world, and I know y'all did a lot of work in this, and we finally got Transform.
Well, we have a Section 18 for Transform. We have a, as of just a few days ago, what we have now is a Section 3 label that has been accepted by EPA, which is, you know, for those of you who don't know what a Section 3 is, that's the full normal label. But as of this time, we have not seen that. They're working on getting it, getting the state registrations and so forth. But until that time, we can still operate off our Section 18.
Well, it's been blowing up Twitter, and I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, because you know those labels can change, but
they can, and at this time, we, you know, until
you just
we
don't know.
No, until we get the actual Section 3 label in our hand, look, we still got our Section 18, and we're good to go.
Everything that we've heard so far is that it's going to be basically the same as that Section 3 label we had for Transform in, when was it, 2013 when it first came out.
All right. Well, didn't want to throw that out, y'all, in the dark, but I know a lot of people probably have questions because it's been going around on social media pretty hard. Seems like they're doing a good job pushing it out to social media right now.
Yeah, it's definitely becoming widely known that they did get their label.
Good. So with that, you wanted to talk about Rainfast, which I think is an appropriate thing to talk about while we're sitting here in the remnants of Barry, and had about 2.5 inches yesterday at Stoneville, and what we got, probably quarter inch, half inch today, but it's cloudy, cool, and a lot of leaf wetness. So Jeff, they're pointing the finger at you, brother.
Well, I mean, I'll just start off this section by saying there's one thing, and I know all of us got a bunch of calls last week about what impact is this tropical storm going to have on the plant bug sprays that we're putting out.
And fungicide sprays and rice and everything else in the world.
Yeah, and the, you know, the first thing I start off with telling every single person I talk to about this is no insecticide is rainproof. It's going to have an impact on the performance of insecticides, but the impact is going to vary greatly depending on what insecticide is being used.
Would you say that's in general more impact on insecticide than something like a herbicide or a fungicide?
I think it's individual compound dependent.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of guys used to herbicide labels or fungicide labels with, you got 4 hours, you're good. You know, now there's some out there that's much longer than that.
Well, and a lot of them now say until dry. If you call a company guy and ask him how rain fast your product is, he'll say, well, when it's dry, you're good. And there's probably a lot of truth to that. But, you know, there's a lot of things that we don't know. On one day, it may dry in 15 minutes, and another day, it may take 2 hours for that droplet to dry on a leaf.
And it depends on what adjuvant you stick in there with it, and leaf wetener.
And that's one thing that some of the work, you know, and this is one of the hardest things in the world to work on, is rain fastness, because there's so many variables that impact it. But one thing that we have noticed in some of our research is that using some kind of adjuvant is going to help. And it needs to be a good quality adjuvant. But, you know, before a big rainfall is coming, we don't usually talk a lot about adjuvants with insecticides. They don't tend to improve the efficacy of insecticides. But we have seen them improve the stability of it in the face of a pretty good rain shower.
Yeah, and Gus Lorenz has some data from a few years ago over at the University of Arkansas that says the same thing. And now we have a student that's actually located here at DREC doing a lot of this work. So next year we're going to have a lot more information on this. Generally speaking, you know, the way I kind of explain this, because when you start getting in these rainy periods, it's the number one question, you know, that we'll start getting all of us about rain fastness. Generally speaking, as a rule, acephate's the worst. I mean, I love to see 8+ hours, and if you can get more on acephate, it's better. But if you're needing to spray something like that, most insecticides, I say 2 to 4 hours. There's some specific examples where we know when it's dry it works. Prevathon's a great example. I mean, I've put looper test out and got a torrential downpour within 15 minutes and still zeroed them out years ago before we started seeing some problems with resistance in soybean loopers. Transform's another one. I've done some plant bug tests where it appeared to be rain fast pretty dang quick, and there's a lot of other examples. But just as a rule, until we get our hands on a lot of this, you know, more recent data, 2 to 4 hours is probably about right for most things, with the exception of acephate. But no rain is obviously better than some rain. It doesn't mean it's going to be a zero if you get a rain 3 hours later.
So Don was talking about chemistries, and you just went through a bunch of different chemistries there by trade name. Is there any one that you would say, if you've got a storm coming and you're targeting a specific individual, that one's going to stand out in your mind?
Well, when I think about it as a group of chemistry.
And that's what I'm saying, as a group of chemistries.
The IGRs tend to the IGRs and the diamides really kind of stick out in my mind. And again, transform. I've had aphid tests where literally driving out of the field, I got rained on and thought I ruined the test and still got 50% control with almost immediate rainfall after. Those kind of come to my mind. Products like Bidrin come to my mind. I've actually conducted some rain fastness tests with it. So, you know, those are some alternatives you can switch in and out depending on the pest you're after.
One thing from an insect control standpoint that you have to think about with this kind of discussion is that we're really talking about two different things. You can have either initial knockdown or residual control. And so I think with a lot of things, that initial knockdown, rainfall is not going to have a big impact on those insecticides. But what we have a tougher time measuring is the impact on the residual control. And residual control is something we have a hard time measuring anyway, and much less the impact that rainfall might have on that residual control.
Yeah, it's different. It's difficult to quantify, but, you know, it's very easy to see the impact of rain on, say, something like acephate.
So generally speaking, just to kind of wrap up the rainfall discussion, if you can get 2 to 4 hours on most products outside of acephate, your control will definitely not be zero. I would not necessarily call it a wash off. Will it be what it was if it was applied and no rain and you know, good sunlight and sit out there? No, it won't. But it don't necessarily mean you have a failure.
And I would even go as far as saying that most things within an hour, you're probably going to be good. We don't have a lot of confidence at that time frame. As you get out to the 2 to 4 hour, like Angus said, be a little more confident. But just because you get a rain within an hour, I wouldn't just throw up my hands and say, well, that insecticide's gone. You still need to go out and evaluate it and check and make sure before you just line up another spray.
Yeah, so I guess one thing just kind of end with, I mean, keep tuned to this conversation because, again, we got a lot of efforts going on right now into rain fastness, you know, real rain fastness of a lot of the insecticides, and hopefully that'll be coming out soon.
And even with the products like Transform or Prevathon, the more time between application rain, the better.
All right, guys, y'all got anything else you want to add before we get off of here?
I think that's it.
I think Jeff's thinking, or he always looks like he's thinking over there. What you got in your pocket?
Probably a pocket knife and a few keys.
I got a pack of chapstick and some little nicotine patches because I still hadn't had a dip since December.
Well, you're looking good, brother. You done shed some pounds. We know you've been working for the state.
That's right.
Don, any parting thoughts?
Oh, I think we're good.
All right, Whitney, don't be shy.
Thanks. Glad to be here today. It was a good experience seeing my first podcast. Just remember, I'm here if you need me.
And that number again to reach you at is?
901-592-8787.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to sign off. If you need anything, please call Whitney first, and then the rest of us will be there to follow.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.